time the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago. Well, it's that time of the month. I'm talking about Gordon Goldsboro and Abandoned Manitoba, obviously, but today is also Canada Day, so we thought it would be the perfect time to have a special edition of this segment and get a behind-the-scenes look at what it's like to be a field researcher like Gordon on the quest to discover ancient relics and discovering the mystery behind abandoned historical sites. He's pretty much Manitoba's version of Indiana Jones. Good morning,
Good morning, Gordon. Nadia. Wow, that's an introduction.
Right. That's how I see you. Now, today's a little different because what will we be talking about today?
Well, normally, of course, we pick a spot and we talk a little bit about that spot. But I thought this time, because, you know, we're on the cusp of summer, it's beautiful weather, it's Canada Day, you know, why not get out and enjoy our province? So I thought, well, why don't I share with people one of my recent trips? You know, I just come back from a two-day exploration to Western Manitoba. Had a fabulous time. The weather was great. The places I found were fascinating. And I thought, well, share a little bit of that and maybe gives people a little bit of enthusiasm. Maybe they'll want to, you know, they'll feel inspired. They want to go out and see it for themselves.
And I always have wondered about what it's like to do the actual kind of discovery part of your job. So how was the journey, first of all?
Well, largely uneventful. You know, I always worry a little bit. Sometimes the places that I'm going, if I'm going to run out of fuel, if I'm going to have mechanical problems, if I'm going to, you know, be out of communication. My wife always worries if I'm going to fall through the floor of a rotten old building and, you know, end up killing myself.
Like Indiana Jones.
Well, sort of, you know, big boulder running, coming towards me. But no, it was relatively uneventful, but I had a very productive trip though, too. I got lots of information. I came back with just loads of stuff.
All right. Don't hold back. Let's start.
Well, maybe you should talk with about a little bit about the route that I took, you know, because I think that's part of it as well. So I was gone from basically 2 days. I left in the morning of one day. I arrived around dusk at home the following day. So thereabouts about 36 hours altogether. I was on the road of that time about 20 hours. So long days. Wow. You know, my attitude is as long as the sun is shining, I should be out and searching. And in the course of those hours, I traveled a little over 1,200 kilometers, about 775 miles, which, well, it's almost as far as from Winnipeg to Calgary.
So. Yeah, that's a lot to do in less than 48 hours.
That's right. And, you know, and what it means is I'm on a schedule and I can't stop for, you know, just relaxing. I'm single-minded. I want to get out there and get stuff. So I basically circumnavigated Riding Mountain National Park. I didn't go into the park. I actually just went around the park. So I went out to Porter's La Prairie. I kind of went up through Gladstone, then up the east side of Riding Mountain Park through McCreary, for example, then across the north end of the park through Dauphin and Gilbert Plains, Grandview, Roblin, then down the west side of the park, down through Russell, and then back along the south side of the park through places like Birtle and Shoal Lake. Ended up at Brandon, and then from Brandon, I shot back along the Trans-Canada back to Winnipeg. Say, 36 hours, I was back again.
How many historic sites on that trip?
Well, I always go with a list. I don't know how many I'm going to find, but I always have a list of what I'm hoping to find. In this case, I had 37 things on the list, and I thought that was pretty hopeful. I usually don't get to everything. And actually, this time, I did pretty well. I got all but two of those 37.
35 different sites.
35 sites. And it covered an enormous span of things. You know, there were buildings, there were grain elevators, for example, there were historic homes in the town of Birtle. There were monuments, quite a number of different monuments. And in some cases, there was just a spot of, you know, there was nothing there necessarily. There was just a spot that had some sort of historical significance. So,
and how do you find out about these sites?
A whole variety of things. You know, our listeners are some of their best sources of material. You know, I'll get contacted afterwards and say, hey, I listened to your episode about X. Have you ever thought about doing one on Y? And I've got lots of great ideas that way. So I'm really, you know, hopeful that, you know, I'll get more in the future as well. So that's one source. Another is that I'll be doing research on something completely unrelated and then I'll stumble upon something. You know, I'll find a reference to something that sounds interesting. So I'll put it on my to-do list or to-find list, maybe more correctly. And right now, I've got about 250 things on my to-find list. You know, so I'm always pretty much wherever I'm going, whatever part of the province, there's inevitably something there that I'm going to have to go and search for. Sometimes it's complete serendipity. You know, I don't even plan to find things. So there was, in fact, one place this time that I found I had never planned to find. It was just a complete accident. I was driving along and suddenly, look it, there's a bridge. Now, of course, anyone who's listened to me long enough knows that I have a real fixation for old bridges. And here was an old bridge that I had never seen before. And it was a complete accident. I had actually I had two potential routes that I was going to take. One a little bit further, but a little more scenic. One a little shorter, faster. But I took this more scenic one. I always take the road less traveled. And lo and behold, there is this little bridge. And it's I haven't done research on it yet, because inevitably, because I didn't know it was there.
Sure.
I couldn't know much about it. But I do know it's probably about 100 years old, just judging from its architectural style. There's another bridge in the nearby vicinity that's of similar age, I think. So probably about 100 years old, but, you know, complete accident.
When you get to these sites, what do you do? I mean, you had such a short amount of time for each of these sites. What's the process then?
Well, that's it. I'm only usually at each site maybe 5 minutes, sometimes as many as 20 or 25 minutes, but not a lot of time. So first order of business is to take photos. You know, I want to make sure I document the site as thoroughly as possible. So for buildings, for example, I do what I call four corners. I walk to each corner of the building and take a picture, so that kind of shows two sides at one time. And by walking around the entire building and taking corners pictures, then I basically get a picture that is completely surrounding the building. I can see it from all angles. And that's good, because a lot of times these buildings change. You know, there's been a couple of cases in this particular trip, for example. There was a grain elevator where they had put up some additional steel bins next to it. The last time I was there, it didn't have those. And so the only reason I knew that is that I had four corners. So that's one of the things. And I took lots of pictures. I think in the course of my travels, I took 630 some pictures. Just me crazy.
But again, you have to go through all of those pictures.
Oh,
I imagine.
Do.
Yeah.
You do. I mean, some of them are just bad. I mean, they're not good pictures, so I just delete them. But a lot of times, there's just different angles. You know, sometimes one shows a little more of one thing, one shows a little less. And so, because in this digital age, you know, it doesn't cost anything to keep pictures, it doesn't cost anything to take pictures, I believe in taking lots, you know, and just sorting through them afterwards and picking out the best ones. So, yes, I take pictures, make little notes if there's anything, you know, that I need to keep track of in my mind. I make little notes. I take a GPS waypoint, you know, because some of these places, you know, if I didn't have coordinates to go back to them, I would have a heck of a time again. Well, in fact, the two sites I was not able to find were ones that I didn't have good coordinates for. I mean, I knew the general vicinity where they were, and friends of mine had told me roughly where they were. And in both cases, I didn't succeed in finding them, because they just weren't where I thought they would be. And I just didn't want to spend hours wandering around looking for them, and then ultimately maybe not even then finding them. So I'm single-minded. You know, if I don't find something quickly, then on to the next one, because I want to maximize what
I can
find.
Well, you have 250 things on your to-find list, lest we forget.
And growing, because I'm getting suggestions all the time.
You also have a drone as well.
I do. And
how does that work?
Well, it gives you, of course, an eye in the sky. You know, and a lot of times, these historic sites, you can't see the full scope of them from the ground. So, for instance, the main reason that I went to this particular part of Manitoba for this trip was that there was one spot that I absolutely had to have a picture of for my upcoming book. As you know, I'm working on a book. And I had to have this picture. I had to have it. And it wouldn't have worked to be on the ground, because the whole point of this one spot, it was so heavily overgrown that when I first went to it, I couldn't see anything. I'd been there a couple of times, and I didn't think there was anything there. And then lo and behold, when I looked from above with a satellite photo, there it was. There was a building hidden by a lot of foliage. So I thought, well, I got to get the eye in the sky. So I sent up my drone, and there it was. You could see the roof kind of peeking out through all the foliage. And that was the picture that I needed. And I think I took over 120 drone photos, just drone photos alone. So the number of photos at a site can vary from, I think, a minimum of two or three to, in this case, over 100, to make sure I had just the right one. In fact, that particular spot I went to twice in this trip.
Why? Why twice?
Well, light is an important thing. You know, I want to make sure that the light is on the object in the right way to really make it appear attractive. And in this particular case, I had arrived at Dauphin late in the evening of the first day, and it was about 7 o'clock at night. And I thought, well, it's sunny right now, but I've heard the forecast for tomorrow might not be so good. So maybe I should go and check that out tonight in case it turns nasty tomorrow. So I drove an extra hour, You know, I got there a little after 8 in the evening. So, of course, the sun is starting to set. Their shadows are lengthening. But I thought, well, you know, who knows? It might be nasty tomorrow. So I sent my drone up. I got a bunch of pictures. They didn't initially look all that good. They were quite heavily shaded. But I got back and I in DOF and I checked them out. And they actually turned out pretty well. But I thought, well, I'll just hold out the possibility that I might want to do it again tomorrow morning. So I got up the next morning. Beautiful, sunny weather. I thought, well, I'll go back. So I drove another hour back there again and sent the drone up. But of course, now the sun is from the opposite direction. And it's amazing the difference that it made to the pictures. So the ones the night before were good. The ones the next morning were great. So that's why I ended up with so many pictures from that spot, because I had to go there twice to make sure I got just the right picture. Because I'm a fanatic for wanting to make sure that I have just, in my mind, I have a mental picture of what I want. And if I don't get it, well, I've been known to sometimes go back and back and back until I get just the right one.
So much dedication.
Well, I guess I'm just obsessive that way.
Or obsessive. Gordon, tell us about, give us a couple of the highlights in terms of places that you discovered.
Sure. Well, one of the highlights for me was a little cemetery that was almost on the Saskatchewan border, just south of the village of Shellmouth, Manitoba. And I had been told where it was. I had pretty good coordinates for it. So finding it wasn't an issue. In fact, getting to it was relatively easy. You know, I am known for, of course, taking the path less traveled, and it often means they are not what you'd call a navigable road at all. In fact, I've found some that are not passable even. But in this case, it was nicely graveled. It was recently graded. I got there easily, and it was a beautiful sight. It was a wonderful afternoon. It was sunny, and the colors were spectacular. A nice blue sky, a green grass. It has recent rain, so the vegetation was just beautifully green. And I love that kind of highly saturated color. And it was a nice sight. It was a little knoll, a little hill. They put the cemetery on the top of the hill. The grass had grown up. It hasn't been used in quite a long time. I think the last burial had taken place in the 1940s. So it was quite I guess you could say it was an abandoned cemetery in some ways, but beautiful. I mean, there was a few monuments poking out through the grass, and I went and looked at a number of them. A friend of mine had wanted to get a picture because one of his distant ancestors had been buried there, and I took a picture of that particular one. And I remember thinking that, you know, this is, I mean, if I needed a place to be buried, you know, there this would be not a bad place.
Noted.
Yep. So that was a highlight. And then not very far away, I was actually driving into Russell. And on the horizon, I could see this red thing. It looked like maybe the roof of something, but it was bright red. I mean, I thought, what is that? So I got closer, and it turns out it was a little one-room schoolhouse that somebody had put a red roof on. And other than the fact that it had windows boarded up, you could almost imagine it was still in business because there was a swing set. In fact, they had mowed recently. They'd even mowed underneath the swings. And I thought, well, there's an invitation. So I got on the swing and I swung a little bit.
No, you didn't.
Of course.
I love this.
It's part of the experience.
Cool.
I did my four corners of the school building. There was even a little stable behind there. When the kids were going there, they would have ridden their horse. They had a little stable building. And take a few notes, and then on my way. And again, that was one of those serendipitous finds that I hadn't anticipated. But hey, when you have a place like that, you've got to stop. But I think one of the real highlights for me on this particular trip was in the village of Silverton. One of my other passions is grain elevators, and of course, because they are disappearing so fast, and there's not very many of them left that are, you know, some of them the early days. I mean, there's some of the ones that were built in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. They're still around, but the older ones are getting more and more rare. And in Silverton, there's a nice old elevator. Well, here in Winnipeg, people often talk about ghost signs. You know, in some of the buildings in downtown Winnipeg, for example, you can see old signs that were painted decades ago. They're starting to poke through the paint. The newer paint's coming off. Behind there, you see these old signs. Well, this grain elevator had the original paint that had been covered over by years of other paint jobs. But the newer paint had come off, and you could see the original sign on the side of it. Oh, that was a highlight for me. And so I sent my drone up. I went the drone around it with the drone, taking pictures from all angles. I took dozens of pictures of that little grain elevator, too.
Gordon, what's that feeling like when you happen upon something that you didn't plan on, something that really kind of excites you, and knowing that, you know, maybe not many people know about this?
That's right. You know, and I often think, like, life doesn't get any better than this. You know, you have an enjoyable day in Manitoba. The weather's great. You're learning something that you never knew about before. And in my case, I have the good fortune of being able to share that. You know, I can come in and tell people about the places that I've been and say, doesn't that sound interesting? And a lot of times they say, yeah, I'd like to go and see that myself. You know, and sometimes they do. I mean, people get inspired and they want to go out and travel and see Manitoba. And that's really my, I guess, my underlying motive here is to get people out and seeing the province. And hopefully they'll find things that they didn't expect and that I didn't know about. Just last night, I had an email from a friend who let me know that a little schoolhouse that I had been to some years ago had been demolished. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's a little sad, but it's a reminder, of course, that a lot of this is changing. You know, and that's why I take pictures. Even if it's someplace that I've been before, I'll take pictures again because you never know how much change has happened between the two times. And this may be the last time that I'll be able to take pictures. Who knows? That little grain elevator may be torn down, may be burned down, may, you know, disappear within the next year. And I'll be really glad that I stopped and took pictures. I'll remember that day, that beautiful day in the sun, that I had such a great time.
It's a perfect way to celebrate Canada Day by appreciating our history and our geography.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
Gordon, thanks so much for this.
You're welcome, Nadja.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.